Channel 2 Right, and beginning this little short visit of Mr. Eastman, Saturday morning, the 1st of April, 72. Channel 1, Channel 2 Right, and beginning the visit was Mr. Eastman, this Saturday morning, the 1st of April, 72. Channel 1 Right, 2, Channel 2 Right, and beginning of this little short visit of Mr. Eastman, this Saturday morning, the 1st of April, 72. Channel 2 Right, and beginning of this short visit to Mr. Eastman, this Saturday morning, the 1st of April, 72.
Mint.
Yeah, well, I'll put a glass of water.
Okay.
Or half a glass.
All right, we'll do that.
Yeah, here they are.
Yeah, well, she's going after a glass of water.
You know what I find? What I find is, I start clearing my throat, and then it gets raw.
Yeah?
And then I keep on clearing it, and it gets more and more raw. And when it's something like this, it'll sort of help it out.
Well, we started to fix that bread this morning over there in that thing. Didn't work.
It what?
You know, that thing.
Oh, yeah. We put a different end on it, and that's what the trouble was.
Well, guy said that thing.
I don't think Mr. Eastman likes you. Don't like sweet potatoes, do you? He don't come from the sweet potato country.
He doesn't eat between meals. It's amazing.
Yep.
Well, I mean, at regular meals.
No, I don't eat between meals.
I mean, at meals.
Huh?
Do you eat sweet potatoes?
No, we don't use sweet potatoes very much.
I think you have to be from sweet potato country.
John Palmer says, if you're going to live in the South, he says, you got to eat like the Southern people. He says, you got to eat sweet potatoes and black-eyed peas and...
hog's jaw.
That stuff.
Have you ever learned to like it? Cornbread?
Oh, we always used to eat cornbread up north.
Oh, I didn't know that was north.
Mm-hmm. They make some cornbread up there.
Oh.
And then they have what they call mush. You know what mush is?
Oh, yeah.
I used to have mush and milk. Jesus, that was a treat.
Mush and...
Mrs. Eastman seemed like she was having a good time last Sunday when we was out knocking around.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, she sits home all the week, you know, and I'm on the go. And I suppose when it comes Sunday, she does like to go somewhere.
Well, let me see. When was it? Saturday we stopped in there?
Yeah.
Yes. She knows how to talk, Miss Eastman. Gee whiz. She keep you... You're... Well, how am I going to say it, babe? I mean, it's not dull around the house when she's at it. Huh? She keeps things going pretty well?
Yeah.
I mean, she
I've got to get in touch with that ear doctor up there someday and see if he can do anything for my doggone ears.
Well, I wish you would, Miss Eastman.
I don't know. This last week seems though that I've been worse than ever.
Oh, they just wandered around out there.
Yeah. I told them to look around. They're from over at Billy Richardson.
Now you know we gave you his name.
What'd you say his name was, Lovelace?
Put it on a piece of paper.
I'll write it down for you. Let me have the directory again.
No, that's not even close.
Garlington.
Garlington, let's see. Garlington. Garlington.
Says what?
Garlington. Garlington.
James Garlington.
I had it pretty near, didn't I?
Yeah.
Why don't you take just a common piece of paper? Well, that's all right.
It's all right. Okay. I'll write it down. Ms. Eastman says she has to stay around in order to get the telephone call.
Yeah.
She knows pretty much what's going on.
She keeps track of me pretty close.
I haven't looked in that little shed out there, but the last count, she thought she was losing on that. Your wife's house. You was inching up on her.
Oh, she thinks that I was taking up too much room out there, but...
Yeah.
You have any idea how much, Mr. Eastman, I owe you?
Huh?
You have any idea how much I owe you?
I think the doggone book said $108, but I ain't sure. It ain't... Oh, give me 75 or something like that from now on.
And then I gave you the 50. You see,
Garlington, G-A-R-L-I-N-Z-T-O-N, Garlington.
You see, I gave you the 50, and then you say, okay. And you'll see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you see what it is, Mr.
You have to have an appointment with him.
Yes, you call.
Yeah.
But it's pretty easy to get an appointment.
When could you get up there, Miss Eastman?
Huh?
Faye's up there, you know. She could call him for you.
You know, my next door neighbor, or the second door, from Pennsylvania there, he had a heart attack the other morning. He's in Gainesville in the hospital.
Oh.
They had him in the intensive care unit. They had him all wired up to some machine there to see the reactions of different things.
Yeah. Well, you don't want anything like that happening.
I'd laugh. I was telling Miss Ernie Caffold over there that lives right back of me there. I was telling him about his having a... He says, I know there was something wrong with that man. He says, you know, he said he walked down the road. He said, all the last week, just like an old dirt farmer. Just like an old dirt farmer. I got a kick out of it.
Yeah.
He and old McDougal had a fight, you know. And old McDougal hauled right off and poked him right in the eye. See, and give him a black eye.
Oh, he did? Well,
yeah, man, they got in a fight then. The fella had to part him. And, Evelyn see it out there, see him fighting. So I was digging a hole out there for the cesspool from a septic tank. And Ernie came out and he wondered what I was doing that for. Well, Jesus, I said, if you're going to kill old McDougal, I got to have a place to bury him.
But you didn't see the fight.
I wasn't home.
Yeah. Oh, I see. You were somewhere else. Yeah.
I see.
No, I wasn't home.
Well, McDougal just doesn't want anybody around his place.
Huh?
No. McDougal doesn't want anybody around.
No.
tell you, too much me.
I got a pretty check the other day down there.
With a picture on it.
It's from a Hawthorne over there, see?
Oh.
Down at that Tack and Togger saddle shop, they had one of them big 4-foot fluorescent light fixtures up there, and the transformer burned out. Jesus, the smoke just rolled right out of it.
Oh, that's pretty.
It scared them.
Yeah.
So I had to go up and change that. Yeah.
Well, that's $75. You can put this in. It's not a pretty check, though.
Well, that's okay. It don't matter about the pretty on the check there. It's a figures that's on it.
Well, I so appreciate you helping me this morning, Miss Eaton. But that runs pretty now, don't it?
Yeah, it does.
Let me tell you, it is so hard to get things. I go down there, and they've got, you see, a new carburetor cost you $45, $50.
Yeah.
And this rebuilt one cost $20. Well, on this model, one model, I told you about it, it's got the feed goes in on this side. And the next 6 months, it goes in on this side.
Yeah.
See? Well, how do I know which way on one it is? So I come home and look at it and go back. And you see, once I get the idea, I got to go ahead and do it. Or else I'm lost for another week or two. You see how it works?
Yeah.
And then I go down there and call. Well, I tell you, it's a longer story than that. I went down here to get one, and they had the wrong one, so I was down at Ocala, and I figured, well, they'd get it quicker for me.
Down Swift's?
Yes. I put in an order for it down there. About a week, I called back, see if it's in. They says, we didn't order it. If we ordered it, we'd have to get it through White Electric anyhow, so we figured it'd be easier for you to get it up there through White Electric. So you see how it does?
Yeah.
It just puts you off and puts you off and puts you off and puts you off.
But they didn't let you know.
Yeah?
No, they just wait for you to call them.
Well, we got a pretty damn good fine adjustment on that carburetor, because that's burning clean, see?
Mm-hmm.
And when it smokes, you're getting too much gas, see, for the air that's taken in.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it right just where it quit smoking, see? So that's...
Let me tell you, can you get some of that conduit at Scotty's or someplace down there?
I think so.
I'll pick up a piece. And, then the first pass will pass right on. Say, we got to fix these shingles someday whenever you got a little time.
Well, when you get around the holler there, I took a job the other day there that's probably going to take me a couple of weeks anyway.
What you going to do about your doctor now?
Well, is your doctor?
Yes.
Well, I'll call him up sometime first of the week and see what he can do better.
All right.
Yeah, don't put it off, because I think he can help you.
Yeah.
No use fooling with it.
You
that
got,
check will take care of you.
Did you give him the number and everything?
Yeah.
Well, now, he's your man. He's good. He keeps Faye here, and her mama. Yeah.
Well, I don't ever recommend a doctor just on my own, but there's just most everybody who goes to him.
Yeah.
He's a good doctor.
Does he doctor just ears, or does he take nose and throat along with it?
He does nose and throat, but he's more interested in ears. When I broke my nose, that's the way I first knew him. I went off my horse and broke my nose, and he met me down there. You know, he's real good about doing things special for you.
Well, there was a doctor up home, and he doctored the ear and nose and throat. And there's some people up there that had some throat trouble. And they was going down to New York City to have theirs taken care of. They figured that this doctor up home there wasn't good enough. Jesus, they got down there to the hospital. This doctor up home there used to go all around to different hospitals operating and one thing and another, you know. Jesus, these people got down there to have this specialist that they were paying a hell of a big price for down there do the throat, and in come old Doc Crockett. Jesus, was they sore. He went ahead and done it down there, and they had to pay the price, and they could got it done for half right to home there.
There you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you are.
He was a specialist on it, you know.
Yeah.
My boy had mastoid come in his ear, you know. And the doctor at the home said, well, we get him down to Crockett's, he says, and see, he says, I'll watch it. And he said, when I think it's about right, he said, we'll get him right into Crockett's. So he talked to Crockett about it. And so the day come when they thought his ear was about right. And so we took him down to Doc Crockett's office down there. And Crockett looked at it, you know, and he had a thing he stuck in there. And you pinch it there and it opened his ear right out, you know, so you could see it in there. He says to Doc Grant, he said, boy, he says, that's just right. It couldn't be any better. He says, all you got to do is just give it a little sweep, just like that. Well, Doc Grant says, my God, he says, Crockett, that's your job to give it a sweep. It ain't mine. So, Jesus, he give it a sweep, and he says to me, look here. And I looked in there, you know, and Jesus, the yellow pus was just a-coming right out of where he'd cut it. See, he'd come right out. He said, that's just right. Well, then he took some cotton on a stick, you know, and he swabbed it out. And he pushed a buzzer, and his nurse come, and she said, now, you irrigate that good, he says, with so-and-so. And, oh, gee, they fixed up some kind of a solution, you know, and irrigated out, and God, his ear come all right.
Is that right?
But I had to laugh at the old family doctor. He says, but God, that's your job to give it that sweep, he says.
Oh, I wish we had an old family doctor.
Yeah. I had an uncle that was a good family doctor years ago.
Oh?
When I was a boy, we lived, I don't know if I've told you this or not. We lived about 2 miles out of town. My father always had good horses, you know, and well, in the wintertime, there'd be 6 feet of snow. He always kept the road plowed good between our house and the village. He always had a real nice road down there. And old Doc used to come up to our place and put his horse in the barn and feed it. And he'd put on a pair of snowshoes and go a couple miles across the lot to doctor an old fellow over there that had pneumonia. Well, if it come, you know, if he didn't get up there till supper time or after supper, why, I'd go with him to carry the lantern, see, and he'd carry a satchel. Well, we was coming back one night, and I said, Doctor, ain't it just a little bit beyond the call of duty for you to go over, come clear up here and walk clear over there a couple of miles in the snow to doctor a fella when you know you ain't going to get no money out of it? Jesus, you know, out come that head and he grabbed me right by the neck and he says, young fella, he says, I want to tell you, when I graduated from medical college, I took an oath to do everything that I could for mankind. And he says, I'm doing just that. See? Mm-hmm. Well, now when the old fellow died, he had over $30,000 on the books, and that was a hell of a lot of money in them days, you know. Back 60 years ago, that was a lot of money. But the old fellow, he'd fulfilled his pledge to his college. Mm-hmm. See, he was doing everything he could for mankind. And after he'd been dead a number of years, and after I got married, my wife's grandfather was telling about him. And they said that he was over to this other place, and another old man, and I knew the other old man, but you know, I can't think of his name. There's Warren something. His first name was Warren, but I can't think what his last name was. But anyway, he lived about 20 miles or so away from town there. And they'd been doctoring with other doctors. And he had gangrene in his leg, and they was going to cut his leg off. Well, somewhere, somebody suggested that they get old Doc Griff, his name was Griffith, to come over and have a look at it. Well, said old Doc went over, drove over there, said he looked at it and studied it all out. He said, I can't do a thing for that today. But he said, if you're alive tomorrow, he says, I can. So the next day he went over. I'm telling this to you just as her grandfather told it to me. He went over the next day, and her grandfather was there to see this fellow, because he lived neighbor to him. And her grandfather had been in the Civil War, and he was used to army life, you know, and one thing and another, and blood and one thing and another. Old Doc says, well, God, he says, if there's somebody that's got guts enough to hold a wash dish, he says, I'll operate on this fellow's leg. So her grandfather says, well, geez, he says, I've been through the war and seen a lot of it. He says, I can take care of that wash dish. So he said that they got him ready there, and he said, old Doc started slitting that right down through, you know, and taking, pinching it and getting all that old rotten blood and stuff out of there, you know, and then he'd wash it out, get it out, put some antiseptic or something in it. This, her grandfather said, Jesus, he began to wonder whether old Warren was going to have any leg or anything left. Said he just kept a cutting that right out, you know, and just cutting right down through, you know, and then pinching that all out and getting it out. God, after he got done, he took and put some stuff onto it and bound it all up, and he says, I'll see you next week. Her grandfather said, Jesus, he didn't know whether he'd see him or not, or whether the undertaker would see him. But by God, he said, you know, that leg got all right, and then old Warren was still alive and walking around on it. Now the other doctors all wanted to take it off.
Yeah, yeah. how about that now?
That's it. But he knew how to take care of it. Yeah. I think that he'd been in the army too. I think that my uncle had been in the army too.
And he did it right there at home.
Took him right on the kitchen table, they said.
That is.
Right on the kitchen table.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of different stories about different things that old Doc Griff done for people around like that.
But it was all out there visible where everybody could see it.
Yeah.
And now you see they're off where nobody can see it. You don't know what to do, do you?
No, this man, this neighbor of mine down there, you know, that just got the heart attack. Jesus, he won't let anybody see him. He wouldn't even let his wife in to see him.
How about that? Yeah.
And if you need a doctor in the middle of the night, you have to go up to the emergency room.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't get a doctor to come to your house. God.
Now, you didn't think you'd live to see that, where you'd have to go to the doctor, and the doctor wouldn't come to see you.
Yeah, I know.
Did you?
I know.
You know, you've had to get used to a whole lot of things, Mr. Eastman.
Well, you know what? It wasn't too long ago that I was talking to a doctor about their coming around to the houses and one thing and another. He says, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. He says, you can call a doctor and tell him how the hell of a bellyache you got, but you can't make him come. Now, that's the way they feel about it. In the old days, it's just like old Doc Griff. As long as they got a living, that's all they cared about.
Yeah.
And you know, people in them days, they didn't have too much money. Now, these old Doc Griff, he'd take a load of hay or 50 bushels of oats or something like that to feed his horse, you know, or potatoes or anything, you know, that they could eat, and carrots. When they'd get too damn many potatoes and carrots and stuff, my father used to buy it off of him.
Oh.
See? We lived on the farm up there, and God, if he got too many oats and he didn't have a place to store them, my father would go down with the team on a lumber wagon, you know, and get them, bring them up, keep them up there for him.
Oh, really? Yeah. And that was
the doctors in them days, they took an oath, you know, to do all they could for the human beings. I don't know what they do now, but they sure don't.
Well, now, that was some little ways from your daddy's house to Dr. Griff's.
Yeah.
But he didn't care. It didn't bother him how far it was.
No.
Well, that's a big change. I can remember some of those things.
But you know, you take it today, all the doctor thinks about is the money.
Oh, yeah.
They hollered like the devil when they was trying to put Medicare through Congress, you know. The doctors claimed they didn't want it, but that's one of the greatest things that they ever had.
Yes.
But hell, look, there was one doctor down here to Miami, you know, they checked on him and he made $250,000 in 1 year off of Medicare patients.
He could do something else for a while.
He just went right to town on it.
And that was cash money.
Yeah.
That wasn't on the books, Mr.
No.
Eastman.
Oh.
Well, it's just like me, you know, when they operated on me down there in Ocala, see. Jesus, they give me a bill to turn into the government for $600. And I kicked on it, you know. Well, he said, you ain't got to kick too much. He said, the government will pay you 80% of it. See, that's what they figured.
Uh-huh.
Get it out of the government.
When did they operate on you?
Huh? I guess it was 4 years ago.
I didn't know that.
You didn't? Jesus Christ, they cut me from here clear to here. Took my insides all out and looked them over and skinned my gallbladder out. You know, your gallbladder is supposed to be just about as big as your thumb.
Yeah.
Well, they said that my gallbladder there was bigger than your hand, and the edges on it was all curled up like a lace curtain, like ruffles on a lace curtain. It's all fringed up. And they said it was all kind of hard on the edges of it, just sort of dead, see?
Yeah.
And they had to skin that all out. They said they had a hell of a time.
Of all things. Well, I didn't know that.
You didn't? Well, geez, there I was taken. You remember when the tree rolled over on Joe Olson's house and smashed it in?
Yeah.
Well, I had it just about finished fixing back, and I was inside putting ceiling blocks on. Jesus, at about 10:30 at night, that hit me with that awful pain. And Jesus, I couldn't sit down, and I couldn't lay down, and nothing. All I could do was walk. And Jesus, I walked from one end of that house to the other all night long. And it come about 6 o'clock in the morning. I told Evelyn, I said, Jesus, I got to see a doctor somewhere. I said, Jesus, I can't take this pain any longer. She said, doctor, nothing. We'll take you right to the hospital. So she stopped up and got Lena Walker there. And Lena come down with the car, and they loaded me in and took me down to the hospital. And I got in down there, and they took a sample of my blood, and my blood was rotten. And they thought that I'd had leukemia. They thought I was just about on my last legs with it. And the doctors that examined me down there said, well, you might just well go back home. He says, we can't do nothing for you. He says, you got leukemia. He says, your blood is rotten. He says, well, then the other doctor said, well, as long as we got him here, he said, we better take some x-rays. So Jesus took me down to the x-ray room. And got on the x-ray table there, you know, and this woman reached over me to turn me. She wanted me a little bit different to get a different picture. She hit that spot. And when she hit that spot, Jesus, I went right out, you know. And she slapped me on the butt. She said, wake up here. She says, what's the matter with you? Well, I said, you hit that spot right there? And I said, I thought I was done. She said, right where? And I showed her, and Jesus, she went right out of there. She was gone 10-15 minutes. And she come back with two doctors. And one of them says to me, where is this sore spot? And I showed him. He says, can you roll over here? I rolled over, and he said, what about this spot right there? And Jesus, he touched that and went right down. Well, he says, that's his gallbladder. He says, put him up to bed, he says, and we'll take care of him. So they sent Jesus, I can't think what that fellow's name, what that doctor's name is. They sent up there. He was a gallbladder specialist, see? Well, he come up and he gave me an examination and a couple of shots. And he left word to the nurse there that when I got them awful pains, where she was to give me a shot, see? Well, there was one colored nurse up there that, boy, she was good. Geez, you know, that I'd ring for her and she'd come and she'd give me a shot, you know, and she'd talk to you and she'd kind of rub around your side and one thing and another and kind of massage you over one thing and another. And she was awful good. Well, then I had this other white nurse in there and she was a mean old bat. Geez, you know, I rung for her twice and she didn't come. She'd sense one of them girls is learning there, you know. Send one of them in there, and I told her what I wanted. And I'd wait 15-20 minutes more, and geez, I'd ring her again. She send her in again. I was just reaching over to ring the bell. Doc come in, and I told him, geez, boy, he went out and he got that nurse, and he brought her back in there in a hurry, with a shot. And well, she said, I come in here twice, and says once. She says, you was in the bathroom or someplace, and the other time says you were clear down the end of the hall. I said, my God, woman, how could I get down there? I says, when I can't even turn over in bed. Doc pipes up and he says, that's the kind you get here. He said, just like her. He says, they won't do nothing. And he gave her hell right there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I never saw that done.
By Jesus, he gave her hell right there, I'm telling you. He says, when this fellow's in pain, he says, you get here with a needle. He said, don't you send some of these other girls in. He says, that's your business. And he talked meaner than hell to her.
I never saw it done, Mr. Eastman.
But he did.
I know a lot of times they feel like doing it.
Yes, by God, he wasn't a bit backwards about it either. There's two of them doctors together in the other fellow's chambers. I can't think of that other one's name. The Chambers is the one that operated on me. But they took me there. They kept me there at the hospital about 2 weeks and got me so that I was pretty good. Well, then I come home for a month to get recuperated up there, you know, and get your blood up in shape. And then I went back down and they operated on me.
Oh, is that long a time?
Yeah.
Oh.
Jesus, wasn't it?
Oh, they wouldn't go ahead right then.
No, sir. They said that my blood was in the condition that if they'd operated on me, then I'd have died right there.
And it was your gallbladder that was causing your blood.
Yeah.
I never heard of that.
No, and ever since I had the gallbladder out, I've been a lot better than I ever was.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So you figure you still do a day's work?
Yeah. There's a colored woman that works for Monty Harlan down there in that ranch motel, and she's just had to have a gallbladder operation. Jesus, boy, they take the meat off of you when you have one of them.
Yeah.
But that colored woman, God, I didn't hardly know her when I see her.
She's off.
Yeah.
Yes.
You never, old Dr. Griff never got a hold of you and performed any surgery on you?
No, I was just a kid, Jesus. I wasn't, I guess I was 14 when he died, something like that.
Oh, I see.
But you never, nobody ever got you on the kitchen table?
No.
Well, Mr. Eastman, you've done a good bit of doctoring yourself on the horses and all.
Yeah.
What could you do?
Huh? I doctored cows more than I did horses up there.
Well, what could you do to the cows?
Oh, I used to give them that aconite there, mostly.
Yeah.
And I used to go around getting somebody had a heifer that couldn't freshen, and go and get the calf, and geez, that was a hell of a mess. I used to soak them with soap, you know?
No.
Didn't you? Take soap suds. Soap them to beat all, you know, and that'd get them slippery so you could get the calf.
Oh, they couldn't calve. Oh, is that right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Take a cow that can't calve, and you push your calf back and take soap suds, and soap her good, and then you can get it.
Yeah. Well, I never thought of that. Just any old soap, don't matter.
Huh?
Just any old soap.
Well, yeah, any hand soap.
Oh, there. Mm-hmm.
Soap her right up, make good suds.
Yeah. Well, what else did you do?
Well, that was mostly that. If somebody have a cow that got bloated or something, we take and give them a little kerosene. Did you ever give them kerosene for bloating?
No. Mr. Eastman, I never had a cow bloat. What makes them bloat?
Well, I'll tell you, up there they used to get in the alfalfa, you know, and alfalfa make them bloat.
Yes.
Then sometimes one would get in the apples.
Oh, yeah.
And they get too damn many apples, you know, and they'd be just about drunk.
Yeah.
Sometimes, well, I had two or three different times, I had to go and get an apple out of a cow's throat.
Oh, yeah.
He's choking on apples, you know.
Yeah.
You know how to get it out?
I have no idea.
Take a tug right out of a harness, and start to poke it right down the throat and poke a goddamn apple right on down.
Oh.
Take a what?
A tug. Take a leather tug right out of a harness.
And just poke it on down.
Right,
you don't take it out, you put it down.
Oh.
Well, you see, down here, we don't have nothing rich enough to...
No, we don't have that down here, you know.
We don't have no apples, and yeah. We don't have no alfalfa.
I've seen alfalfa grow down here.
Yes, I have, too.
There was one year on that road between Orange Lake and Citra, off in there. Geez, it was as nice or pretty a piece of alfalfa, and it stood right up just about that high and all in bloom.
Hip high.
Yeah. Geez, that was a nice piece of alfalfa. And the next year, I come along there, and geez, it wasn't a damn thing. I don't know, it wouldn't stay on in 1 year, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You don't see much, but there's nothing that's prettier.
Yeah. Mm. But when I was A boy there, you know, the alfalfa grow right up to a horse's back. And you get on the mowing machine and you take a mow around and you couldn't tell where it was cut off. You take and drive the left wheel where the right wheel come when you went around before.
Yeah.
And that'd leave you so you'd cut off about 6 or 8 inches, you know, of what was cut down, see?
Mm-hmm.
But you see, you'd have to drive right on top of it and push it right down.
Yeah. That, Mr. Eastman, that could be your imagination, that it was that high.
No, it isn't no imagination. It's right up there. Gene, you take and cut it right off and it'd almost stand right up there. But the damn stalks, you know, were pretty near as big around as your finger.
Yeah.
And you'd have to work like the devil to get that dried out so you could put it in the barn and to keep.
Before the leaves fell off.
That's, yeah, and that's why they got filling silos with grass. You see, they take them big stalks, you know, and you take them, if you fed it to the cows right dry, God, they couldn't eat them stalks. And you'd have to throw them out. And you'd have a pile out back of the barn there, you know, half as big as the barn there, where the cows wouldn't eat them stalks, see? Well, you take and chop that and put it in a silo, and they'd eat every bit of it.
Oh, yes.
See?
Did you have a chopper?
Well, we didn't. We had to hire it done.
Yes.
But that's how they come filling silos with hay instead of corn.
Oh.
Because that hay grows so coarse.
Yeah.
But it don't grow coarse like that up there now. Gee, if you get alfalfa stands up about that high, you got a damn good crop.
Yeah. That's as high as I ever seen
it. The lime. They claim that that you've got to put a lot of lime on the land if you get any alfalfa anymore up in there.
Yeah.
Well,
I think I better go home.
Well, you might as well stay for lunch, Miss Eastman.
When you get ready for the kitchen or the roof up there.
Now, what are you getting in for now for the next 2 weeks?
Well, I took a job of fixing up a house down here at the Boardman. It's got to have quite a little done on the outside of it, and some on the inside, and then they got to paint it.
Yeah.
Well, now, you know, I spoke to you about them big jobs.
Well, if we start washing away up here, because of the roof, we'll have to call you.
Oh.
Down to right around 775-800. End of the short visit, Mr. Eastman, this Saturday morning, the 1st of April, 72. Channel 2 right around 750-800. And end of this short visit, Mr. Eastman, this Saturday morning, the 1st of April, 72. Channel 2 right and around 750-800. And end of this short visit, Mr. Eastman, this Saturday morning, the 1st of April, 72.